Follow-up analyses. Within psychology, LDF developed in areas of research that traditionally used very large samples: measurement theory, clinical diagnostic research, taxonomic research in general. With such large samples, almost everything is significant. So emphasis was on substantial effects based on cutoffs and relative size rather than significance test. For example, using percent variance to determine additional LDFs contribute. Not just looking at the significance test, which is almost always significant if you're working with 10,000 cases, but saying, all right, how much more variance do we get? The first function accounts for 30% of the variance, the second accounts for 15, the third accounts for 2. Is 2 enough to get excited about to build a whole third function, to complicate our lives that much? Do we care? Well, percent variance was the basis. We tend to have structure weight cutoffs rather than significance tests, and we tend to use percent classification to discuss what the model does, again, instead of significance tests. As LDF was adopted into research areas with strong traditions of significance testing, more tests were incorporated into LDF, most commonly as follow-ups. MANOVA, growing out of ANOVA, had strong ties to the null hypothesis testing traditions using both omnibus and follow-up significance tests. So what I want to do now is take you through three different families of follow-ups. Again, I want to emphasize the reason for taking you through the three families: they don't ask or answer the same questions. They all ask a different thing and give you a different story about your discriminant function. Univariate follow-ups. Basically, these use the original MANOVA or the original LDF as a check whether there's anything there. You run it, if you reject the null, you set it aside, and you start doing ANOVAs. You do a separate ANOVA with follow-ups for each dependent variable. The great advantage to this is specificity. We're going to talk the rest of this discussion about a continuum between simplicity and specificity. Specificity means if you really care about each of those variables, and you really care whether each of those variables is different across the groups, this is the analysis for you. Because it doesn't combine any variables, it doesn't build any aggregates, it doesn't build any composites, it doesn't build any variance. It says, you know what? The multivariate test tells us something's there, let's go looking. And this lets you look for each specific DV and describe the pattern of differences across the groups. As you might imagine, you're going to do a whole lot of significance tests, and you have to deal with whether or not you're going to treat those as a priori tests and leave them uncorrected, or post hoc tests and start Bonferronizing or something else.
And what's the difference between that and the ANOVAs that are done as part of the LDF?
Nothing. But what you're saying is, you know, we sort of do those and tell ourselves the bivariate story, then go look at the multivariate story. In this tradition, the only thing you would look at in the rest of the LDF is that p-value. If that p-value is significant, you don't look at the structure weights, you don't draw the map, you don't look at the centroids, you don't do any of that shit. You just say, hey, something's there. Go back to the ANOVAs and use those to describe the relationship between the groups and the variables. Because you really care about each and every variable. There's a story, there's a hypothesis, there's an application, but you got to keep those variables separate and get very specific information about how each variable relates to the grouping. Oh, well, they'll take care of themselves because they'll pattern out. But it's a description of what is. But at the bivariate level, because you desperately really care about each variable by itself, combining them just won't work for some reason. Like if you're working for three different groups and each group gives you a different set of criteria that they're interested in, so none of them are interested in combinations that include some of theirs and some of somebody else's. So what you have to do is say, okay, you were really interested in this variable, here's how it works. Okay? LDF follow-ups. You do your discriminant function, you look to see how many functions are significant, you then draw your picture. You plot the centroids for the groups. We'll show you how to do all this. It's really simple. We'll plot the centroids for the groups. We'll label those dimensions using the structure weights. But now the question is, which LDFs discriminate between what groups? I want a significance test to tell me whether discriminant function 1 separates 1 from 2, 1 from 3, and 2 from 3. I don't want it on the original variables, and I don't just want to know that that first function is significant. I want to know what groups each function discriminates significantly. So this is a nice augmentation of the spatial and reclassification depictions, the classification function and that pretty picture that we're going to draw. Because now we've got the picture and we can ask, so which groups are discriminated by which function? If you have a concentrated structure, it tells you exactly what groups can be significantly discriminated. If you have a diffuse structure, it tells you whether the second LDF provides discriminatory power that the first doesn't. What else do you get from this second function? Though LDF equals MANOVA, different availability of outlet led to LDF as the follow-ups of a significant MANOVA. For a long time, and in fact, some places on campus you can still be taught, you run a MANOVA, and if you get a significant MANOVA, run a discriminant function to describe the MANOVA. They're the same model. Okay? The significance test that you get out of LDF is the same significance test you get out of MANOVA. It's exactly the same thing. They will always agree. And the third, pairwise LDF MANOVA follow-ups. So your first LDF is on multiple groups and you've got a model. But you may want to know, okay, that's cool, but I want to know the model for separating group 1 from group 2. Because part of this model is separating group 3 from both of them, and I don't care about that right now. I want to know how group 1 and group 2 are separated. And so what you do is you run additional analyses. You run the discriminant function over again, but instead of putting in groups 1 and 2 and 3, you put in just 1 and 2. Then you put in just 1 and 3. Then you put in just 2 and 3. It's a different pairwise approach. It's also an older pairwise approach because it was easier to do this than to do the other thing earlier in SPSS. Here's another time, or here's when I use this most often. I've got this nice model. Now I've got pretty good separation here. Using one, the other, or both functions, I can separate these groups from each other pretty well. I mean, that's what function 1 does for me. Separates 1 and 3 from 2 and 4 from 5 from 6, 7, and 8. Make sense? And dimension 2 separates 3 and 4 from 5 and 6, from 1, from 7 and 8. So between these two functions, I'm doing pretty good, except for I can't separate 7 and 8. That doesn't mean 7 and 8 can't be separated. That doesn't mean that 7 and 8 can't be separated by this set of variables. This model isn't doing what we want it to do, because most statistical models don't. What this model is doing is trying to maximize group separation overall or on average. You with me? So it's picking a set of variables and a weighted combination of those variables that does the best on average. And so what works best on average might not be how you tell 7 and 8 apart. And telling 7 and 8 apart might not increase the variance enough that you get a third significant dimension. So when you've got discriminations that you cannot make within the model, this is a great way of saying, all right, how do I tell 7 and 8 apart? Yes? No? Okay. No, that's fine. When we were doing that stuff with the military, we had 31 groups on a four-dimensional map. Now, I got about 56% correct classification. You're saying to yourself, 56? Shit, I can flip a coin and get 50. No, you can't. There's not two groups. There's 31. you're rolling a 31-sided dice. That's chance. Yes, you can buy a 31-sided dice. There's enough gamers out there who want different things. You can buy any dice you want. So 56% against the base odds of 1 out of 31 rocks. Right? Chance is around 3%. 56% is wonderful. But I had pockets. I'd have a pocket of these four jobs that were very similar to each other in terms of the function that gives me the maximum separation on the 31 groups. Does that mean I can't tell these folks apart? No. It just means I can't tell them apart with this particular four-dimensional space. So what do? I grab just those four, an extension of this idea. I grab just those four, I put them into their own function. I get this. I don't remember which of the four is which. Sorry. Better with this second function in combination with this, I'm now up to 71% correct classification. Then I run one more to separate those two, and this bumps up to 74%. And by the time I did these multiple analyses for the couple of other clusters that I had, I'm up to 91% correct classification. And by classifying people properly as to their best job, I can select the best training for them for that job, and they come home alive more times. Okay? This is hybriding. So I put you in a model, and the model comes back and tells me you're in group 24. Or 16, or 19, or 31. So then I take everybody who's assigned to any of these four groups, and I stick them in the second discriminant function. And if you come out assigned to one of these two, I stick you in a third discriminant function. Make sense? So we can stack this thing.
Can you run that practically speaking? Can you end up running multiple equations?
Yes. I literally put your data in, and I get a printout that says what group you've been assigned to, with what probability. If you've been assigned to one of these four, I do a select cases, and anybody who's been assigned to one of these four gets put into a second discriminant function. And anybody who's been assigned to one of these, I select, and they go into a third function, and it comes back and it tells me which group you're in. Now I know which of 31 groups I think you belong to. There was one of these that was four deep. Okay? Because remember, when you're trying to tell two groups out of many apart, the discriminant function is trying to do well on average. It's not trying to separate everybody from everybody else.
When you do this, you're saying that you go back and you do another LDF. Like when we do our first LDF, that's more exploratory when we're trying to figure out.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I've got all these models built.
Yeah, and then what you put them in.
Yeah, I put your data in and have it compute your...
And then you put the equation.
Yes. Yeah. And it actually will do that for me.
Is there anything like you have exploratory and then confirmatory factor analysis?
Yes.
For LDF?
Yes. Yeah, it's the same as for multiple regression. Confirmatory is when you do one of those four tests, nested, non-nested, population, something like that. That's testing a hypothesis that will fit into one of those four. All four of those can be applied here. Okay? There was another way of separating these 31 jobs up, that it was a 14-job category procedure that was based on a different model that I can't talk about. But it was another way of saying, how many kinds do we have? We have 14 kinds. I could actually build a better model of the 14 than of the 31, but doing well on that model didn't help us pick people to train them to bring them home alive. So I could do better on the model that didn't freaking tell me anything. Okay? So, but we actually built that. That was two different criterion variables. We asked the model was different for the two different criterion variables, same as in regression. We also did this, we also asked then if this model would work on regular military forces. It was designed for special forces. We asked if it would work for SEALs. It was built on Green Beret Alpha teams. We asked if it worked for SEALs. It doesn't because they have a different job classification. So we can do all of the things we can do with regression, we can do with discriminant function. It's a little more complicated with LDF because the statistical packages aren't built to do any of them for us. But if you know how the model works, you can always bend the model to test a specific hypothesis. No, it has to do with actually building the functions in compute statements instead of having the computer do it. You have to know what variances it's maximizing and then do it yourself in other models. Remember I said that a two-group LDF and a multiple regression on a binary variable are the same thing? You can exploit patterns of consistency like that. So you end up getting some stuff out of factor analysis, some stuff out of LDF, some stuff out of MANOVA, some stuff out of GLM, some stuff out of regression, and you hybrid that model that way.
But then the complicated questions work better.
As almost always, when I work with 31 groups instead of soldiers, which is where they started, we can pick people better, we can assign people better, we can train people better, and they come home alive. And I got to tell you, at the age of 21 years old, working with a dependent variable, come home alive, kept me up nights. Because some of these people, I was there when they were trained, and eventually I was going to have their data. So you go drinking with somebody, you want them to come home. You know, it's just, it's a little bit different than theoretical modeling. And it is part of that adage that I told you guys before. If you learn statistics, someone will feed you the rest of your life. If you get good at statistics, you will get to do cool and meaningful stuff.